Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You know what? That the TED is a nonprofit organization devoted to ideas worth spreading from some of the world's brightest minds, from professors to CEOs to entrepreneurs. TEDx Columbus was among the first franchisees of the concept and has grown its reach each of its 7 years, bringing together local presenters with big ideas to spark conversation and connection. James White Sr. Gave a TEDx talk last year that told the story of everyday racism in his life. Here he details the difficulty in renting an apartment as a black man.
When I knocked on the door, the woman came to the door, and she looked at me, and she said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Yes. I'm the person who called about the apartments. I'm just coming down to make my selection." She said, "You know what? I'm really sorry, but my husband rented those apartments and didn't tell me about them." I said, "You mean he rented all five of them in 1 hour?" She didn't give me a response. And what she said was this. She said, "Why don't you leave your number? And if we have some openings, I'll give you a call." Needless to say, I did not get a call from her. Nor did I get any responses from the other people that they gave me on the list where I could get apartments.
James White Sr.'s TEDx Columbus talk last year was picked up by TED Talks and since has garnered well over a million views from around the world. Coming up, we'll hear from a couple of the presenters from this year's sold-out event. Joining us now is the founder and co-curator of TEDx Columbus, Ruth Milligan. Welcome back, Ruth.
Thanks, Ann. It's always a pleasure.
That was I remember hearing James White Sr.'s TEDx Columbus talk last year. It was picked up. When TED Talks picks it up, it's on their own volition, right?
That's correct. 1% of all TEDx talks are invited over to TED.com, which is sort of like winning an Emmy.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It went from 5,000 views to maybe 1.1 million views.
Just about, yeah. Mm-hmm. And still counting.
Yes.
It's still there. Define TEDx. Define TED for us first. I remember we always go back to that same conversation you and I had at a coffee shop 6 years ago.
Right. So let's just do the 1 minute on TED was founded as a conference 32 years ago by a guy that wanted to have interesting people come for dinner and share their ideas, but he knew they'd never come. So he hosted this conference called TED, halfway between Silicon Valley technology and LA and Hollywood entertainment and design. And he invited them to the stage and said, "You have 18 minutes, you can't have notes, and there's no podium, and you can only talk about one idea." And so that was the start of the conference. In 2006, it got sold and to a nonprofit that now runs it. And they started putting the talks from these conferences online. What's now TED.com. And in 2009, the communities were like, "Let's have the TED conference come to us," because people were really aware of how powerful these talks were by this point. And they said, no, we're not going to move the conference around, but we'll let you do your own. So that's where TEDx was born.
And Columbus was one of the first.
Right. So the announcement was made in February of 2009, and I happened to see the announcement the day after. And we applied for a license, and we were the 35th city to host a TEDx event in the world.
And it's grown every year, despite your efforts to maybe take a break once in a while.
So globally, it's grown. I got the number this morning this week, they might hit 70,000 talks. There's almost 20,000 events in about 1,400 different cities. So we'll host our seventh event. We're probably one of the few, we say this, no one will validate it, that are still the same organizers from the beginning, all 7 years.
And it's expanded in ways that maybe we didn't anticipate even 7 years ago.
Right. So when Nancy Kramer and I co-hosted then and still will again tomorrow, the TEDx program that we did at the Wexner Center.
Even though every year you say maybe not next year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still there's such an amazing team and energy around it. It is hard to give it up, with apologies to my husband. I still am married to Dave, not Ted. I'll say that just for the record. The cross connections and introductions of ideas to each other. I mean, people are, I can't even begin to say how many different sort of things have sparked from this event.
From things as obvious as OSU students.
Right. So the TEDx franchise within Columbus is where you're headed. Mm-hmm. There is extremely popular TEDx at Ohio State. And this next year, we'll support a TEDx at New Albany High School, a new one for Whitehall City Schools, one in Columbus City Schools. We've supported the one at Marion, which is the first TEDx event in an adult prison in the world. We've done Wellington. There's a big group of people from Columbus Academy coming tomorrow to work on their own. So schools are really embracing it. Plus, you'll hear later from one of our speakers who his first experience with TEDx was at his own corporate event at Battelle. Hmm. And so TEDx Cardinal Health, TEDx Battelle. And then we've had this outgrowth of TED-like things happening. Mm-hmm. Earlier this year, I helped to host and curate and coach an event at Ohio State for the CCTS, which is their translational science department within the School of Medicine. And they hosted 12 talks on stage for their annual meeting, and they were all exactly in the same style of TED. They didn't call it TED. They didn't apply for a license, but they embraced it as it was a TED event.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And by the way, the TED Radio Hour produced by NPR airs on 89.7 on Saturday afternoons at 4 if you're trying to kind of get a grasp of what we're talking about. What is it about the TED concept, the talk itself? What's different about it? Why does it matter?
I think if you lead with the notion of story.
Uh-huh.
That's going to distinguish it first and foremost, that the speakers are coming to the stage with one idea and they're going to support it not just with data and charts and graphs, but they're going to tell a story. In addition, they're going to show a little bit of themselves, a little bit of vulnerability, a little bit of how I got here, a little bit of maybe I wouldn't have shared this story in front of a professional audience. And that's partially what makes it fascinating, is that I get to actually know the speaker as a human, not just as sort of a waitress or a waiter of data. And that gives us connection that we normally wouldn't have.
My all-time favorite, maybe only it's so memorable to me just nationally, and Ted is the neurologist who had a stroke and
yes.
lived to tell about it.
So you remember probably her holding not only the brain in her hand, mm-hmm. we're talking about Jill Bolte Taylor,
yep.
But that she was on a treadmill when she had her stroke. You can still picture
yep.
the detail with which she delivered that moment.
Yes.
And so that the sensory points, I can see it, I can touch it, I can feel it, are what brings us, you know, memory and evokes emotion. And so if I ask people on the street, what was your favorite TEDx talk in Columbus? It's going to be completely connected to what they sort of had the most emotional connection with.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the talks that you like may not be the talks that I like. And that's the beauty of the TEDx concept of the event, is that we watch them together in a very democratic kind of way, that there's general admission seating. No one gets a reserve seat. No one's has front row versus back row.
In fact, you can't even necessarily get your seat back after a break.
We actually tell you, we want you to change up because we want you to have different perspective. And that the person sitting next to you, you may have never met before, but you could turn to them and say, what'd you think about that talk? Mm-hmm. And spark a conversation that all of a sudden connects you in a different way versus, oh, hi, I'm Ann Fisher. I work at WSU. It's, oh, gosh, could you imagine what that would have been like to have walked in the person's shoes?
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have a blend of scientific talks, personal talks, sort of trend watching talks.
So how do you come up with a theme? Tell us, this year it's disruption.
Correct.
What are some of the other themes? And then tell us how you come up with them.
Oh, gosh. So we've done, the first year I remember specifically, we named it global because we wanted to pick ideas from Columbus that could or have gone global. And, you know, we had John Glenn. We had a scientist from Battelle. We had the head of the School of Architecture. And so we used the themes. What's next? Out there was a year that we did a lot of gender. We were able to curate a lot of gender talks underneath that one. Last year was steam of the engine, steam of the education, steam of the sort of fortitude you need to get an idea out. Disruption felt like a nice shift from steam of like being a little more contra, a little edgier. And so disruption this year, we'll play it out in the typical disruption of innovation and then the disruption of my own life and how did I recover? So, and a few other things in between.
What does it mean to curate a TEDx Columbus talk?
It's like,
is it like the the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade the day after you start working on next year's?
Oh, no. Because
okay.
I need a break.
You take a nice long break.
I take a long break, which was one of the challenges this year because we did this really spectacular, I have to say, it was one of my favorite events was the TEDx Columbus Women event. Mm. And we had 15 speakers, all but two were women, with 600 attendees at the Southern. And I walked away thinking that was just spectacular. And we curated it with a group of 13 volunteers, and we asked for themes, we asked for nominations. You get a end-to-end list of people who are qualified to give a talk and have an idea worth spreading, and then you look at them together and you say, okay, I can't have only, you know, people that look like Ann Fisher, because that would be...
horrifying, but go on.
It might be kind of boring if I only had... So we want... diversity is really the key value inside of curation, which is I want a diversity of ideas first, of perspectives, of age, of race, of gender, of just personality types. I mean, I can't think of a more diverse personality spectrum than will be on the stage tomorrow. I promise you. Like from a woman who's just recovered from or is in recovery from a 12-year heroin addiction to the CEO of Cardinal Health to an NFL player to a chef and a chicken, you know, who's a chicken guy and then a DNA expert. Like you don't get that collection in one space and you won't ever again.
What's the audience like?
Well, this year they're really, really enthusiastic. We sold out 2.5 weeks ago.
Right.
We always sell out, but usually about 2.5 days in advance. We come on the Ann Fisher show about a week before, and then the rest of the seats go.
Yeah,
and
no pushing of tickets.
No.
But
we do have a great partnership.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's a newly renovated theater at Whitehall High School. Whitehall's working on a resurgence. And the folks at Whitehall reached out and said, we want to do a TEDx event next year in our community. Will you help us? And we said, sure. And then when we realized we were selling out, we was looking last year, we did it at McConnell Arts Center, but there were booked. And so I said, Ty, would you like to host it? And he was like, heck yeah. So everybody that wants to go and watch it with other people, can go to Whitehall. There's no tickets. There's no fee. We have refreshments. We have the same program. You'll get to see exactly what's happening on stage and be with other curious people. The audience, as I said, is enthusiastic, but mostly they're curious and want to be just have a break. As Michael Brown says from Experience Columbus, he's like, this is one of my favorite days of the year. I get to put work aside and just listen.
You know, I'm always listening to people talk, but I'm always engaged in the talk too. And for me, it's just, yeah, there's no test. There's no quiz. You don't have to take notes, right. Although some people do, but I don't. I just sit back and kind of take it all in.
Who are you coming with this year?
My producer and my assistant producer.
So that's the other piece to this, is that people who come alone really regret not having someone to go home with to talk about it with, or a friend. And oftentimes, spouses will come back together the next year. And we have many, many, many couples that make this like a date day. They say we take the day off of work and we go.
That would be awesome, yeah.
And then we've got companies that bring whole groups together. My friend Sue over at Ohio Health will bring 10 of her colleagues, a different 10 every year, so they can. It's about the conversation that ensues after it, not just about the idea, but about saying, oh, God, I never thought about how we could solve that problem in that way.
On the other hand, though, like I said, I lost my seat one time and I just went and sat by myself for a couple of the talks. And that was cool, too.
Yeah, because everyone's got a like-minded approach. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of respect and honor that these people, these speakers, have spent an enormous amount of their time, energy and talent to prepare this moment. And so we honor that. That's sort of that social contract that I promise to come curious. I put my phone away. I listen without bias. And the speaker promises to give their wholehearted self and the best that they have.
We're talking about TEDx Columbus. We'd love to hear from listeners who have attended TEDx Columbus events in the past. Why don't you give us a call and share your favorite TEDx talk? TEDx Columbus talk, I should say, in the past. And it could include anything really in the region. They all kind of sprout from the TEDx Columbus enterprise. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page. And remember, the TED Radio Hour, produced by NPR, airs on 89.7 NPR News on Saturday afternoons at 4. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Maybe you've heard of the TED Radio Hour. It airs Saturdays at 4 p.m. on 89.7 NPR News. You know that TED is a nonprofit organization devoted to ideas worth spreading from some of the world's brightest minds, professors to CEOs to entrepreneurs. It started as a four-day conference in California decades ago now, and since has grown to global proportions with independent TEDx events popping up around the world. TEDx Columbus was among the first wave of franchisees of the concept, and it's grown every year since it began 7 years ago. This year's theme, disruption. Still with us in the studio is Ruth Milligan, co-founder and co-curator of TEDx Columbus. Joining us now are two of this year's TEDx Columbus presenters, former Ohio State University and NFL football player and co-founder and CEO of Windpack, Inc. It's a safety technology company, Sean Springs. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hey, you're supposed to say I was a Buckeye. You can't forget that.
Former Buckeye.
Former Buckeye.
Former Buckeye, Sean Springs. Welcome.
Ah, thank you very much.
Also, Richard Guerrieri.
Guerrieri,
a 30-year forensic science expert and research leader for the Applied Genomics Program at Battelle Memorial Institute. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Sean Springs, you're a former football player, former Buckeye, a former NFL football player. Now you're creating technology to protect players. Tell us, you know, and in fact, a headline about your business said former NFL cornerback Sean Springs wants to disrupt the helmet industry. What's the disruption?
Well, the disruption came when, well, for me, my talk a little bit, when I heard Ruth inviting me to do TEDx, I was really excited because there's some very, very brilliant people that I've watched for years on TEDx. But when I heard disruption, immediately I thought, in my world, when things collide— and hit together, that's when things disrupt. So the little bit of my talk will be about an idea that I saw in a car seat, a technology that was used to protect my family and my son, and how I repurposed that technology and then I used it for impact protection and helmets. So it's pretty cool stuff. It's a pretty cool talk, and I'm excited about it.
What did you think about doing a presentation like that? Are you? I mean, you're an entrepreneur. Yep. You have a business, another business as well. But are you a natural presenter?
No, I'm not. It's very hard, you know. And you know, people say, "Well, you should be fine. You do TV, and you had the opportunity to play in front of millions of people on TV and inside the stadiums." But when you're on a field. And you have all that equipment on. It's totally different. But now I'm in front of some of the most educated people in the world, and people from all over the world will be able to see the talk or at least know about TED. And so it's a little nervous for me and surprising. I'm kind of like, wow, I can't believe it. I'm still in awe.
How long is your talk going to be?
Hopefully 12 minutes.
Okay, because the one thing about the talks is they vary. Do they just turn off the mic if they go past their time?
No, we just start playing their favorite song, which she just gave me. So.
But one of the things is all the talks, they're all different lengths.
They are different lengths, and it has to do a little bit with how long you really need to share that idea. We say if you were hit on a table making chocolate chip cookies naked by a hurricane, that story may take 5 minutes.
Okay.
Right? But if you have a long history, you know, of working on something for years and years and years, you're going to get 14, 16, 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends upon how much time you really need to tell the story.
Maybe someone like Richard?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long is your talk going to be?
13 minutes.
Okay.
Pushing 14, maybe. Right?
But you go back into the issue of DNA and DNA as a crime-fighting tool 30 years.
I do. And I try to chronicle some of the disruptions that the technology additions have had over the years, leading right up to the emerging technology that we're on the cusp of.
Right. There's something big breaking.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're part of that.
Yes. And my role with Battelle is to be involved in trying to bring the next generation of DNA testing to forensic laboratories.
And how is that a disruption versus a continuation?
It's a good question. And I think technology advancements are progressive and they are constant. And so the forensic community has gotten accustomed to dealing with constant disruptions.
Uh-huh.
Each technology addition usually brings added level of education that's necessary, training, laboratory planning, and, of course, legal acceptance. And those categories aren't going to shift or change much as each new technology becomes available.
That's interesting. Both you and Sean are sort of in a realm of constant disruption. You met Sean, you know, in your career as a Buckeye and then in the NFL, you know, every time you clunked.
An opponent.
Clunk is a gentle word, but you had a disruption. Mm-hmm. But there's also that disruption of introducing the safety mechanism to this business of football, which has got a lot of bad press about its dangers.
Yeah, the NFL in particular, it's been taking a lot of negative press because for years they denied the fact that there was a serious issue with concussions and traumatic brain injury in the NFL. I believe my perspective is different from some of the other manufacturers who produce helmets because I actually wore the product.
Uh-huh.
So and I get it. So I'm excited to share my story because I don't think everyone gets to hear the perspective from a player
right.
all the time. You get to hear from the media, but you don't get to hear from an individual who actually lived it.
Well, usually all we hear from players is about the latest football game, and it's always interesting to hear from players about other issues, too, that affect their lives because you just become such one-dimensional characters, and there's so much more going on.
There's a lot more going on most of the guys, and I can tell you when I was thinking about giving a story, I was just going back to what my father said. He used to always tell me, we all put on earth to provide a service and give back. So that's kind of been my theme as I produce a new next generation technology for padding technology and impact protection. I want to give back to the sport I love so much. They gave so much to me. Including Ohio State. That was awesome.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about TEDx Columbus, the sold-out event tomorrow, but you can still see it for free at the Whitehall High School Auditorium. Is that it?
That's correct, at 625 South Yearling Road.
And you can go to the link for TEDx Columbus on our website at WOSU.org/allsides and get all the information you need to make that date for tomorrow. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to share, have a question or comment, and want to share your favorite TEDx experience, TEDx Columbus. I'd love to hear it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Richard
Guerrieri.
Yes. It's obvious. Richard Guerrieri, you were in first, you were with the FBI, right?
Yes. Actually, my forensic career goes back a ways. I started with the Commonwealth of Virginia back in the late 1970s and worked for one of the commercial laboratories for a short period of time. And then the bulk of my career, about the last 25 years, was spent with the FBI lab. Yes.
So is this kind of experience, speaking in front of a group like this, of really relatively lay people, no doubt about it, compared to what you're used to hanging out with at work, is it pose any kind of nervous tension for you?
Always.
Okay,
yes,
really?
Yes. I mean, I've been an expert witness testifying in court.
250 trials, I think I read.
Yes, that's correct. And I was mentioning to Sean and Ruth before I went on today that typically whenever I would be sworn into court, my last name, Guerrieri, it.
Do they not mispronounce it too?
Always.
Okay, thank you.
Always. And I would be asked to spell my name. Because it has nine letters. And it wasn't until I finished spelling out each letter that I began to get my rhythm, to get through that little bit of nervousness. So if you need me to spell my name, I'm ready to do it.
Maybe you should do that in the beginning of your talk tomorrow.
So, you know, Ruth, do you find that even people, no matter how expert they are in their field, they still are nervous about getting up in front of this group?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it funny?
Oh, yeah. Like, we were talking about that before we walked in, that there are some significant subject matter experts coming to the stage tomorrow, yeah. and some of them are just beside themselves nervous. Not what, many, but a few.
Is it a bad nervous or a good nervous?
It depends.
Richard? I mean, Richard, like, for you, I mean, it's
a good nervous, and it's a good nervous from a perspective that, last year with Ruth and the TEDx group, I became familiar with the process.
Because of the event at Battelle.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And what was different was I've testified a lot, and I've been involved in hundreds of technical presentations. But there's always been a level of distance that you kept from your audience. Huh. It was conveying technical information but not making the personal connection. And the storytelling through the TEDx process and the ability to share a little bit of yourself, reveal a little bit of your passion, and make that connection with the audience was a little different, and that I found that very rewarding, and I'm very excited about tomorrow.
So even people, so you participated in the TEDx event at Battelle.
Yes.
And you must have had a different kinds of feedback from your audience, and they were your colleagues.
They were, yes.
And they learned things about you.
They did. And that's one of the things that was shared was it was very sincere comments with regard to not knowing the passion that I had about the particular aspects of the work. And that made me feel very, very good.
Is it going to be the same talk for tomorrow as it was for Battelle?
No.
No. Mm-mm. Okay.
Interesting. There might be a few personal things he's going to mention, but for the most part, it's a pretty different talk. So
do you feel like you have to maybe, I mean, I don't know how often people think, when they start to put together their talk, do they feel like they have to start off with a joke? Kind of a thing like you do, you know what I mean? It's different than that.
My advice to people, and I should mention and give a shout out at this point to Ohio State actually partnered with TEDx Columbus in developing what's the first class on iTunes on how to be a speaker coach for TEDx. And we watched the process for the last year of how do we actually get people from an idea to the stage and dissect it for people, because we really believe everyone needs a coach, just like every writer needs an editor.
Right.
And it is, remember, it's a two-way process here. Like, I'm delivering a message and someone's decoding it, and if no one is on the other side, if it's just a mirror decoding it, I'm not going to get any feedback. Mm-hmm. But I always say to people that the hardest part, and actually this is a line from Barbie Tootle, who used to write for Gordon Gee, the hardest part of any talk for anyone is getting in and getting out. And so on the getting in side, I always suggest start with a story. I mean, start with a moment in time, a place that you can remember, an anchor that you can't screw up. Because if you start
by... Because you know the story.
Yeah, because if you start by saying, today I'm going to talk about... And that's when I start to go apoplectic. And I say, yeah, of course, this is why you're here, is to give a talk. Tell me what you're going to talk about. Get into the story. Tell me your idea.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of those sort of filler words that we use trying to get ourselves comfortable on stage, mm-hmm. whether it's spelling out your name or saying I'm going to talk about something today and maybe I'll get to it. And then the ending. How do you land the plane?
Yeah.
How do you bring it home? And we advise people to offer the audience a call to action. Something that they can take away from the talk, because we don't really, and this is a standard that we try to reach, is that the talk really isn't about them, meaning the speakers. It's about the audience. And so make the talk about them at the end. What can you, Ann Fisher, take away from this talk? So if we end on ourselves, it becomes like a self-serving sort of, aren't I great?
Uh-huh.
As opposed to, what can I do with what I've just learned from Sean, and what can I take away from it?
Huh.
She's such a good coach. She's the best coach I've ever had.
What's it like? Whatever.
I mean, have you had other speaking coaches?
Well, I tell you, because I'm in TV and entertainment now.
That's right.
He's in entertainment.
Yeah. You have a television show.
Yeah, I do work for Comcast, NBC, locally in Washington, D.C. And I can tell you, when I first retired from the NFL, I had to go to a speech coach because sometimes if I get tired, I start to slur. And Ruth reminded me of that because and that's probably the effects of many years of taking hits. You know, obviously there are some effects of from concussions and traumatic brain injury, and one of them is slurred speech. And I have to focus more. And it was very difficult for me because, you know, I've never given a talk on something for 18 minutes. I didn't. I can talk a long time, but at least usually it's about football.
And it's back and forth.
And it's back and forth.
Yeah, right.
Never 18 minutes into a highly educated crowd. And, you know, it's just different. And sharing my personal stories, because so many times in my life that I always tried to shy away from the public, even though I was a public figure being a football player, but I was always get nervous and kind of put on this front as a tough football player.
So Rich has been on the stand 250, 300 times.
Right.
This guy, Sean, is, you know, on TV every week. And I have a speaker this year who's never spoken in front of anyone.
Yeah.
With her story. And then after her will be the CEO of Cardinal Health, who he's in New York today talking to investors. So, I mean, that's the beauty of this event is that we love how we can support each other in this way. And it doesn't matter if we're not perfect.
But
every year, we are who we are. Right?
Every year I look forward to the post from Ruth Milligan on Facebook saying, done with TEDx Columbus coaching.
Well, that was Tuesday. Yes, it was done.
It's never negative. It's just done. Ready to move on, kind of. Yeah.
Because that means that it's no longer...
The buns in the oven.
It's no longer my... Someone sent me a note saying, are you ready? I said, I'm ready. I don't know if the speaker is ready. I get to pass it off.
Well, what about you, Richard, as far as coaching goes? And was it a different experience with this particular project?
Oh, much different.
How so?
Really focusing on trying to open up to make the connection with the audience on a personal level. Again, as an expert witness, you're conveying information, but you're always keeping a level of distance from the jury. You want them
objectivity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is different. This is being effective, but also being engaging and making that connection with your audience so that they can appreciate the moment and the message you're trying to deliver. And really, the message would be for what they can take home, and in my instance, with regard to what technology is going to bring forward.
We'll continue our conversation about TEDx Columbus. It's a sold-out event this year. It always is sold out, but it's been sold out for a couple of weeks. But there will be an event that's free to the public, for the public to enjoy together at the tell us where.
Whitehall High School.
Whitehall High School.
Yes,
and there'll
be an official live stream. You just show up, and there's 1,100 seats in the theater. So if we fill that one, we need to move the whole event somewhere else.
Yeah, it'll be an event in and of itself. So if you want to learn more about that, learn more about TEDx Columbus, you can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. More conversation coming up. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. TEDx Columbus, it's a series of local talks about ideas that matter, turns 7 this year. 16 speakers and performers are scheduled to participate in the sold-out event this year. Each will share their riffs on the idea of disruption. Still with us in the studio, co-founder and co-curator of TEDx Columbus, Ruth Milligan. Also, Sean Springs, former Buckeye and former NFL football player, also co-founder and CEO of Windpack. It's a safety technology company. And Richard Guerreri, he's a forensic scientist at Battelle Memorial Institute. Sean and Richard are both speakers at TEDx Columbus this year. For more information on how you can enjoy TEDx Columbus this year from a remote location, but with a group Whitehall High School, just check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. there's much more. I mean, how much does the interaction with the other presenters come into play for you as a person, Sean Springs?
For me, that's big. You know, I had a chance to meet him, what was 2 weeks
ago,
to meet some other speakers. And knowing they were going through the same process,
yeah,
and knowing that they were finding some things very difficult, like starting off in your speech or finishing your speech, was comforting to know that, you know, I wasn't together, and we were encouraging each other, like, hey, man, you can do it. Just you got to work a little harder. You got to do this.
Perfect strangers this. Before, though. Yes. Uh-huh. Supporting
and then
other.
We became friends.
It's like
at
a
dinner.
Club then. Yeah.
And then we became friends.
Yeah. What about you, mm-hmm. Richard?
Unfortunately, I'm a little more of an isolated example because I work out of the Crystal City office for Battelle in Virginia.
Okay.
And so I'm not able to engage as much with all the other members, and so it's a little more isolated.
But starting at 12:30 today, he'll get a full infusion when we go back to the Rife Center for the afternoon of rehearsals.
Is it like a dry run?
Oh yeah.
And they'll hear each other's mm-hmm. presentations.
They want to sit through them, right? We'll do them by the sessions. There's three sessions, and we'll run through each session as if it was tomorrow, like a full, you know, dress rehearsal.
Wow, here's,
I'm nervous.
Yeah.
Well, this is why you get it out today. Like this to me, like the afternoon. This afternoon is where it all happens, and tomorrow we get to relax and have fun because we know that technical stuff is done. We have an amazing team that makes sure all the. You know,
how big is your team now?
I don't know. There's probably I know, anywhere
it seems
from.
Seems like the list gets longer and longer.
There's a bunch of different groups that mostly volunteer their time. We have a few paid staff people that support us to make sure that we got the right food ordered and that all the vegetarians and vegans and gluten free people are taken care of. You know, there's lots of considerations when you have 900 people in a space. And we have what I call sort of a white space, which is you want to bring us an idea that fits in with sort of the mission of TEDx and you want to help us execute it. Let's do it.
Like
and
what?
So, like last year we did the morning of action. We did the volunteer, which was great. We just didn't do it this year. But let's see if we can get some people to volunteer together before we go listen to talks together. And so that kind of, you know, we play with those things. It's great because we don't have this prescription that we have to stay within. We know that the talks are the centerpiece and then the performances and the audience experience. So we can build on it.
You changed the time this year.
No, it's the same as last year.
Is it?
We went to half day last year. The year before we were at a full day. And that was way too much. I mean, everyone left absolutely fried.
Yeah.
It was 23 speakers. We were there from 9 to 5. No one could see straight. So this allows people to work a half a day and then finish their week off.
But 16 speakers.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Well, two of them are.
Don't have to tell you.
Two of them are performers.
Tell us about the performers. I know there's Songs at the Center, which is broadcast on WOSU television, and it also comes out of the McConnell Arts Center in Worthington.
Right. So we're bringing that live to the stage. Eric Nesda is going to host that. He'd reached out to us, and I loved the aspect of having songwriters come and talk about their work and then perform it. And we can do that. And we've had such a wide range of performers.
Yeah,
we've had
sure
the
have.
Aerial artists. We had Damn the Witch Siren. We have the Dick and Jane Project. We've had, you know, the Salty Caramels early on in their first iteration. You know, we've had Transit Arts last year, which was such a huge hit. Those guys are fabulous.
Yeah, they are.
So this year, Eric will do the Songs at the Center and talk about songwriting.
Okay.
And then they'll perform three songs, three songwriters.
So it'll be a song in the round, just like they do. Okay.
Yep. And then in the after, the third session, I have to be a little cagey about it because it's a big surprise. But Darren Hoover is actually a visual artist, and we've paired him with an 11-year-old child prodigy named Alex Van Bibber,
right?
Who has played Carnegie Hall earlier this year. You may have heard of him. He's absolutely adorable and just so excited to be on stage. And they're going to do something sort of cool honoring one of our city's original disruptors. And that's all I'm going to tell you. Because if I tell you anymore, it'll ruin it. But it'll be really fun. So that's another, you know, we can sort of introduce a visual artist with a pianist and have them do something different. And
oh, I can't wait to see this.
Get away with it.
Now, as far as TED Talks go, the mother of all of it all, do they do entertainment and things like that too?
Very much so.
Do they get super famous people that everybody knows?
Sometimes,
or maybe sometimes not.
Sometimes.
you know, there's been such a wide range of performers. So when I've been to the TED conference, you usually have a performer in every session. Part of it is the cadence and the rhythm of how you actually put the show together. So I might have 12 speakers, but I'm going to break them into three sessions, and I'm going to make sure there's something in each session that breaks up just the standing talking person, right? So in the first session, I won't say who, but somebody will be interviewed this year. In the second session, we'll start with music. In the third session, we'll break the session up in the middle with this sort of mashup between Alex and Darren. And you don't see on TED.com the promotion of those performances on the videos like you do the talks.
Yeah.
But they're there. If you typed in performances in TED, you could see a whole range of very cool videos that have been released. So it's their mind breaks. The mind can't take so much. It's like a fire hose. We want it to be more like a sprinkler.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I tell my speakers. Don't be a fire hose. Like, you know, give me the information sort of in a sprinkler. Give me space. Give me breathing room. Give me pausing. Don't, you know, come at me.
She's still coaching you guys. You know?
She's always coaching. She's always coaching. She can't help it.
I know. Well, I still got a day left before I can release you from my, you know, waking up in the middle of the night thinking about how you're going to do.
You are forever stuck with me.
Yeah, I would imagine some of the speakers that that you've worked with over the years, they do come back to you.
Yeah.
You're like a good therapist.
I don't know about that. I think I'm probably a bad therapist.
Well, a good coach that no one ever, like a writer always needs an editor. A writer doesn't get so good at it that they don't need to be.
I would say I actually pride myself in that a lot of them don't come back because they did so well in learning and experiencing it with us together.
But there's always a connection?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, there is, I don't like the word club, but there is a little bit of a clubbiness to once you've been through this process that you have a connection that others don't. And that you can kind of share in that and make jokes and totally, you know, rip on me for whatever you want to do at the end of this. You have to wait till tomorrow.
After it's all over.
No, I don't.
Well, we have an email from Brad. He writes, as a former TEDx speaker, I just want to give a shout out to Ruth Milligan for giving scientists the opportunity to tell lay people about the findings from our studies. It is so important that people base their beliefs on scientific research rather than hunches and gut feelings.
Thank you, Brad. I know who that is.
Okay.
Brad Bushman.
Okay.
One of our more enthusiastic speakers last year who took the process so seriously. And it paid off. He gave a great talk.
What was that one about?
About aggression.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, about being hangry.
Hangry.
Yeah. And I'll
is that what those Snickers commercials are all based on now?
I saw, actually, so this is an example. I saw on Brad's Facebook page that he interviewed to give a TEDx Ohio State talk because he loved the process so much he wants to do it again. I don't know. This was a good example of a guy who had two or three different talks in him. When he came, when he was recommended, and when I sat down with him and decided, you know, he had three distinct ideas to share that had proof and research behind them. And we had to only pick one. So it could be that he's applying to give a talk on something else.
Uh-huh.
We've only allowed one speaker back on our stage in 7 years. It was more of a performance with Matt Slabaugh.
Okay. From Available Light Theater.
Yeah, he did a poem the first year and another one. He did another. But we really pride ourselves in saying, you know, there's so many great ideas and people to be on the stage, we don't really want to repeat unless you've got something completely new and different that's really timely and important for the community conversation.
So, Richard, did that occur to you as you were preparing for this that maybe I have more than one talk in me, that there's more than one story that I can use to tell this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Rich has like 10 stories. He could give a whole TEDx talk on anyone.
I could
anyone.
Have asked either of you that. Yes, but
totally. The Buckeyes, Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, right.
Either one of these guys could give full talks on little bits of their.
But isn't that what it's all about? That we all have.
Yeah. Multiple stories to tell. But we're only asking you to pick one masterpiece off your wall.
Right.
Not the whole gallery.
So you found the same thing, Sean?
Yeah. I found that, you know, I could go in like five different directions. I'm hoping I still focus on one tomorrow. I don't get nervous and just start rambling off.
I was going to say, is it like, are they memorizing them word for word or do they?
I like to use the word embody.
Okay.
That you're sort of at the other side of memorization, that you know what the stories are. You've lived them. You can just get up there and tell them. But they are done in a sequence that makes sense for the story arc.
and you don't go over your time. At this point, this is really a game of the clock. And just making sure you get out what you wanted to say in the time that's allotted. Because the reality is, if each one of these guys took 2 extra minutes and everyone took 2 extra minutes, that's an extra half an hour on the program. And, you know, I only have 300 minutes of content. Just no pressure, guys.
Yeah, no guilt trip.
But it is, that is part of the, you asked earlier about the curation. That's part of the curation, is being able to give you what they need to be able to get out the story.
Right. So,
They definitely have multiple talks inside them. Yeah. I mean, you could probably interview Rich just about his testifying experiences and what it's like to defend DNA in the courtroom.
Right.
And you could probably talk to Sean just about what it was like to play in the FNL. And the FNL.
NFL.
The NFL. Talk about slurring.
Fox News.
I need your speech coach.
FNX.
Right.
Because a lot of people, if I went deeper into it, a lot of people would want to know about the NFL concussions and lawsuits. And, right. and there's a movie that's going to come out in December called Concussions.
I know.
That's going to hit this topic head
I've
on.
Seen the, you
know.
I've seen
no
the
pun intended.
Coming.
Yeah, no pun intended. head on. And I have mixed feelings. I'm not sure if I really want to watch it.
I saw the Coming Attractions at a movie I saw this weekend. And I was really interested in seeing it because it's about a scientist.
Yep.
And it just tells you there are these really dramatic stories behind these people that they wanted to ruin his career. I think it's really interesting and fascinating. And this gives you a chance, I suppose, Richard, to talk about something. A lot of people don't get a lot of insights into this. We just sort of accept it, those of us on the outside of law enforcement.
Right. And exactly. And it's telling the story about the science, but also in my instance, being able to share a little bit about an actual court trial and the dynamics that went on, in particular the interaction that happened afterwards with regard to the family of this victim, and that, to me, that was very touching, and it was a defining moment for forensic DNA as far as my career was concerned.
It's what spurred you ahead to pursue it.
Exactly. I recognized the full value and the full potential of what this technology could bring to the criminal justice system.
And that is exactly what we hope from every speaker, is tell me the time and the place when you knew this would be your life's work.
Yeah.
Because that moment is what is so compelling that drove you know, that passion. And so that's what we get. He doesn't get to say that on the stand. He doesn't get to say that at forensic conferences. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get to, you know, he doesn't walk around the halls of Battelle talking about this case. So it's a fascinating story, too.
Yeah. And you too, Sean. Because what you're doing is something, you know, it's something ancillary to what you grew up doing and what you did for a living and made a great living at and gave you the freedom to start a business and that kind of thing afterward. But it's completely, in its own way, kind of unrelated to it.
Yeah, it is unrelated. It's kind of weird. It's unrelated but related.
Yeah.
So
it wouldn't have to be about NFL, or
right.
It didn't have to be about football.
No, it's not about football. It's about impact protection and how we look at it. I mean, I'm going to use an example tomorrow. Like, we have parents out there who would rather spend $150 on some Jordans, but only $29 on a cycling helmet. And are your feet more important, or is it your head?
It's interesting. It talks about our values, then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I read an article about your business and the $300 baby carrier,
car carrier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And
it's
the
original, what in the world?
Yeah.
You haven't had a child lately, Ann, to know that.
No, I'll tell you what,
what's
I haven't.
On the market? And, her kid's in college.
Yeah, but I still remember even back then it was getting to be a big deal. But I know.
That's standard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know.
And there was times when you didn't have car seats.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal on that score, is it's standard, but who can afford it?
Yeah.
And going to the DNA issue, once again, is it just the privileged few that can really take advantage of great DNA evidence down the road and have the law or the legal representation to avail themselves of it? It's going to be interesting.
Yes. And I think what I'm hoping to be able to convey at the end result is that the technology that we're going to be talking about provides a level of hope for being able to solve cases that have never been able to be solved before and help to identify missing individuals.
Richard Guerrieri.
Guerrieri.
It's not spelled that way, people. Richard Guerrieri, 30-year forensic science expert from Battelle Memorial Institute, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And also Sean Springs, former Ohio State University and NFL, former Buckeye, an NFL football player and co-founder and CEO of Windpack. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Both of them are going to be speakers tomorrow at the TEDx Columbus event. As always, Ruth Milligan, co-founder and co-curator of TEDx Columbus, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us again, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.